So I never really thought I had much to share about myself. And not that anything anybody would ever want to hear. But Anna's like, well, yeah, you know, you need to share. And I had some really wonderful ladies tell me that this is the best way for someone to get to know who I am. Well, okay, I'll do my best. I am married to a wonderful husband. Will be 30 years this coming June. Mm-hmm. I have three children, right? I have three children, Chris, Ariel, and Tyler. I have two pugs. They're rescue pugs. And a partridge and a pear tree. No. So now that you know me, we're all set. You can go home. No, I won't do that to you, Anna. Okay, so I'm going to start with my beginning. Hi, Mike. It started with my mom, of course, and I suppose my father, too. She had five other children besides myself. She was married a few times, but her beloved husband, Ted, they had been married, I don't know how long they were married, but they had their first child who died as an infant. And then they had my sister and my three brothers. And then he passed away on her birthday. So in her mind, she was done. At 50 years old, she was going to be done. That was it. She had purposed in her mind, she figured it out, the baby will be 18, then I can go home and I can go and be with my husband. So 9 years later, she fell for somebody. To actually a gentleman who belonged to somebody else. 9 months later, guess who's here? That would be me, if you guessed it. But my mom never had it easy. You know, even with all of the kids, she raised those children by herself, and the youngest one was 10 years older than me, so everybody else was kind of grown up and out of the way, and so it was just me. So I was an only child. But at the same time, I still had one of the brothers who was always like this with me. No, because I was the baby. I got everything I wanted, right? Not really, but that's okay. So I just totally went off the whole grid. When my mom had gotten pregnant, she had told her friend Rena, who she was very best friends with, that's who she had confided that she wasn't going to be here. Well, Rena said that there wasn't a whole lot about the pregnancy that she could tell me because my mother would tell me nothing. She says, but the only thing that I remember was a red dress. And whenever they took their typing class together, the red dress would start dancing and would always throw Rena off. She would lose her typing test because of me. And she said my mother set her up. But that's okay. So then came the birth. I was definitely a scary birth. My mom was in labor for 72 hours. I was guessed what they had termed it as I was an inverted breech. And apparently I was lodged in her back. And the doctor that she had was just going to leave me there, or leave us there, right on the table. And which he did. He was not going to do a C-section because I don't know why. Thinking about it, more than likely he was just too scared to do it. But eventually, after 72 hours or however long it took, another doctor intervened and said, oh no, these two aren't going to die. We're going to save them. So he did. And I guess I'm here. So apparently he saved us. But that wasn't our first close call to death. I was probably a month old, and my mother and one of my brothers was in a car along with myself. And I don't know if I was in a car seat because I don't know if they had those back then. She was going up a mountain, and something happened to the car, and she almost went off the mountain. But apparently, she still didn't go off because somebody, you know, didn't want that to happen. Somebody didn't want me here, but I guess we fooled them. I wonder who he was. So, by me coming into the picture, I guess you could say that I was a little bit problematic for my mom. I gave her early menopause because my mother was 42 years old when she had me. She got diabetes, and I foiled her plan of leaving this world at 50 years old. Whoops. But I think she was kind of happy. I think she enjoyed having me around. And she got to live to be 71 years old. She got to meet my two children. My third one she didn't because he was still in my belly. But I think she was a little favorable to Ariel because I don't know why, if you believe it or not, when she was a baby, she looked just like me. I don't know if you can really, you know, relate to that, but I don't know how she could figure that out. But anyway, so yeah, my mom and Ariel were very close. And I don't know much more to say about my mom, but then we'll go to my father because there's even less to say. I have three memories of him. The first one, excuse me, is I was probably around 5 years old. I didn't know why my father never came around. My mother obviously was not a very talkative person, so she wouldn't tell me what the whole story was. So he was changing the tire on my mom's car, an old station wagon. Do you remember those old ones that had like the wood grain on them? Yeah, ugly ones. I'm really dating myself. He was changing one of those tires. And I sat there, and now mind you, I'm either 5, 6, I'm somewhere in that age. And all the other kids could call their father's dad, daddy, so I thought, well, why can't I? So I asked him, I said, you know, can I call you daddy? And he said, sure. Then after he got done changing the tire, I remember him going inside and making my mom cry. I didn't hear the argument, but then he left and he never came back. What's a little girl to think? Uh-oh, my dad hates me. And you know what? He was probably, you know, he might have, you know, because, you know, my mother messed up. She got pregnant. So that was my first memory of him. And then my second one is when I was in Brownies or Girl Scouts, one of those. There was a father-daughter banquet. And I had gotten this monkey, this gorilla and a baby, a piggy bank, because I had come out of my shell the most. I was very much of an introvert. You couldn't say boo to me without making me cry. You know, I'm a little bit better than that now, but not much further, probably. But, so he took me there. That was that, and then he took me out for a banana split. Then he dropped me off, and that was it. Never saw him again. The last memory I have of him was when I was in high school. I was told that I needed glasses, and we had no money. My mother was, you know, very, very, very not well off. I don't know if you remember all the government foods and whatever, the peanut butters and cheese as well. We qualified for all of that. Probably qualified for food stamps, but my mother was so proud she wouldn't accept that. So I said, you know, well, Mom, I said, he hasn't done anything for me. Why not have him give me some glasses? And she goes, well, if you want him to, you call him. I says, well, okay, I will. So I did. And he said, I'm sorry, I have nothing for you. Well, that was quite the understatement there. My father, he never had anything for me. So that was my viewpoint of God. If my father doesn't love me, why would God love me? And I don't even know if I really knew there was such a God. So, my upbringing, that was it. That was it for him. He was out of the picture for good. I didn't have a really godly upbringing. My mom would take me to church once in a while, definitely Christmas and Easter. That was, without a doubt, we had to go to that. And once in a while, we would go to this little church. And there was a sweet old lady. I remember her. She was like the Sunday school teacher that was in a wheelchair. And she was our Sunday school teacher. And I can remember her name, Cora. I can't tell you anybody else that was in the class, but I remembered her. So she must have made some kind of an impact. But that really, that was my church. I didn't do anything else. When my mom, oh, I guess the thing I do remember most about that church was there was this pastor who loved to scream. He was on that pulpit, and he was the hellfire brimstone yelling at you. And he had one hand. Now, Mom knows this gentleman, but that's the only thing I can remember is he was just a really... Perhaps he wasn't, and that's just my impression of him, but that was my impression. So when I was about 10 years old, my mom had a dream, because she worked for the VA, and she had this dream that she was going to die at her job. So she quit. She put in her 2 weeks so she could pull out her retirement, and we moved to Arizona. We were in Arizona for 6 months. Out of that 6 months, we moved 5 times. I went to 2 different schools, and you don't make any kind of friendships that way. And then my mother had gotten so homesick. Oh, and in between that time, I learned what it was like to be a female. If you all know what that means, there's no little ones here. I grew into somewhat adulthood, but I didn't know what it was, so I thought it was dying. And my mother was at this party, and I'm there, and I don't know any of these people, and I had these light pink pants on. I'm crying in the bathroom because I'm dying. My mother comes in the bathroom and tells me to shut up. Yeah, I'm fine. And she's like, you know, you're fine. You know what this is. I'm like, no, I don't. I was young. I was not even 11 at that point. So I was very young. Anyway, so after 6 months, my mom had gotten so homesick that she quit her job there and packed us back up and off to Maine, went back up to Maine, because that's where I'm originally from. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that. So we get up there, and we got all settled back in. Let's see. I lost my place, so... As I told you, I was a very introverted child, but it wasn't without provocation. Even though my peers would make fun of me, I wasn't a very popular person. I was a big person, still am, but even, you know, as a child, they make fun of you for everything. And this was not in my notes, and I wasn't going to share it, but I had this horrible habit. Ever since I was a baby, I sucked my thumb. And in third grade, I had a teacher who embarrassed me in front of the class and taped my hand and told me I was a child. And so, I mean, it just made things really, really bad for me. And so, needless to say, kids made fun of me. I wasn't liked, except from my mother's babysitters, who happened to be males. My mother didn't keep me in those positions, in those places, for very long, because I did have enough common sense to say, Mom, he's doing something that's not right. So he should pull me out of one to put me into another babysitting position, because she had to work. And that babysitter's child left welts all over me. You know, he was biting me, kicking me, and you name it. So that was that. And then the final one was my sister's ex-brother-in-law. That was a hard one because my mother, you know, you can't, like, pull away from family. And I don't know if my mother really believed me because, you know, when I went and told her, I wasn't one to cry wolf. So she didn't let me stay in that position very long, but it was too long. You know, no child should ever be put in that position. So anyway, she finally pulled me out. And so my mom... You know, she kept me right in close knit. I was a very sheltered child other than, you know, when I had to go to babysitters. But my mom didn't have much of a fun social life. She did like to go to dances, and she would go to dances every once in a while with some of her friends. But her most fun was when she would go to fortune tellers and this spiritualist church. And she went there quite a bit, and eventually she was bringing me because I, you know, was still young, and she didn't want to leave me home alone. And my sister used to do house cleaning for that minister. And I didn't, you know, it was kind of creepy but kind of eerie. Yeah, kind of creepy but kind of intriguing. You know, this whole spiritual realm. I mean, they can talk to spirit, you know. I'm a kid. What do you, you know. But when this minister told my sister, I want you to tell your sister I want her to sit under me. I want to teach her. I wasn't even saved, and it like put all every hair up on the back of my neck. I knew that was wrong. How I knew it wrong was wrong, I don't know. It was obviously the Holy Spirit. So I stopped going. After my sister told me that, I just, you know, I'm done. I got to be away from there. And so then we come to my salvation. Hopefully I'm not running too long. My salvation happened probably when I was about 13. I don't recommend it for anybody. Because I literally had hell scared out of me. I went to this church. I don't even know how I, you know, how I was invited to it. But they played this movie. And, I mean, it was a death movie. And probably back in the 70s, it was 70s, 80s, I don't remember when it was now. I mean, that was the big rage, you know. Scare hell, you know, scare you, scare the hell out of you, basically. And it did. And I went to that church. I was faithful going to that church. And I was at that altar every single service. Get me saved, get me saved, get me saved. And I don't know how often I got saved. I think it was like every single day for a year I was trying to get saved. And finally somebody had mercy on me and said, honey, you're already saved. You don't have to keep doing that. Jesus loves you, you know. And I said, oh, good. But I still continued to go to church because I fell in love with the youth pastor and his wife. They were like a brother and sister I never had. And so they just, the ministering that they did, and they don't even realize that they ministered like they did, but I had explained to them what happened with my mom. And Irene, in her infinite wisdom, she says, oh, honey, that's wrong. And she went to Leviticus and she showed me, I will set my face against anyone who turns to mediums and spirits to prostitute themselves by following them, and I will cut them off from their people. And that scared the bejeebies out of me. I'm going to heaven, but my mom's not going to heaven. So I went home. I mean, I was in tears, and my mother was in bed reading her Harlequin romance. And I went in and I said, Mom, you've got to stop. And I opened up the Bible, and I read it to her. And you know what? She quit going.
Wow.
I think it's because she saw how scared I was that she was going to, you know, going to go to hell. So, but even that, she was very closed with her spiritual walk with me. She just never shared anything. She shared more with my husband about her life than she did me. Apparently, I just didn't ask the right questions. I don't know. My high school was a lot better. I made friends. I was still more reserved than most of them, except that I did have a chatter problem. I had this one teacher all 4 years, and I would have this group of friends, and we'd be, and he was always telling me, 1 year I had it for homeroom. And he's like, every morning, Eileen, be quiet. Eileen, be quiet. And it was always Eileen, always me, until it wasn't. He's, Eileen, be quiet. And the kids started laughing because I wasn't even there. So the joke was on him on that part. Like, Eileen wasn't talking. So anyway, I did pretty good in school. Not great, because when I was younger, I was always told that because my mom had me so late in life, that I was going to have mental issues, that I was going to be dumb. It just, you know, and that's what I lived with. I was going to be developmentally challenged. And once I got into high school, it's like, okay, I don't feel like I am, so let's put, you know, let's start studying. Hey, and you know what? It worked. I actually made honor roll a few times. Usually it was just, you know, open campus or just squeaking by, but I did pretty good, considering. It was fun applying myself once I started. So then graduation came. I didn't have the whole cute little valedictorian thing, but boy, I got my diploma. I was so excited. And then I get home, and my mother says, pack your clothes. You're going to Job Corps. I'm like, what's Job Corps? How, where, how, why? And she's like, because now you got to be an adult. You need to move. Okay. I had only spent the night over to my sister's house, and I went over to a slumber party one time in my life, and I went home because I was scared. I had never been away from home. So I go up, and it happened to be a Wednesday that I went up there, and they had a church service at some church, and they, because they wanted to, you know, appease me, they took me to church. But they forgot me. They left me at church, and I'm like waiting for my ride, and it was a mess because I was like an hour and a half away from home, and I'm crying, and I just want to go home. I'm snot running everywhere, and the center director somehow got news that, you know, I was forgotten and that I wanted to leave, and he came and he saw me. You know, the big guy came down to see me. He's like, probably because he was afraid. I don't know, but when you're a kid, it was pretty special. And he made an agreement with me to try to stay there for 2 weeks. And if after 2 weeks, you know, I can go home, you know, if I don't like it. Well, I must have liked it because I phased out after a year. And I was only there a year because I was helping the teachers and the residential advisor. I was having a good time at that point. I made some good friends, not Christians, but they were still friends. So I took... business and clerical. I was going to take culinary arts, but he's like, no, I think you're more of a business clerical person. Okay, that sounds all right too, except for accounting, because there's no accounting for some people. My accounting teacher told me that. Anyway, yeah. Started my work. Once I got out of Job Corps, I did go home for a brief period, but I had some friends from church, and one of my and I became a roommate, and we were roommates for almost 5 years, which was a long time. I say almost because it got to be really pretty bad at the end. But my mom had gone to Florida, so we stayed in her house or her trailer. So we had a place to stay, so we didn't have to pay for rent, you know, while I was getting a job and all this. And then we, I got my first job at Burger King. And at that point, I had moved 6 miles away up to Augusta area, so I could walk to Burger King, which was 5 miles away. But I worked 5-to-1 shift, and I loved it. I loved getting up, and I loved walking it. And it was just one of those things. I loved being in front of, you know, up front, taking the orders, and getting the customers, getting to know the customers, which was really, I really enjoyed that. So whoever says Burger King and McDonald's is weird, bad places to work, I had fun with it. And then while I was at Burger King, one of the girls that I went to Job Corps with came to the drive-thru. And she's like, hey, what are you working here for? You want a job doing what you were trained to do? And I said, sure. So I went to work for Maine School Management as a receptionist. And I was there for... probably a year. I really, really enjoyed it. The superintendents were awesome. Every time I was chatting with them on the phone all the time. But then we had a new administrative assistant. And what I did not know is that she had this thing for younger people. And I was younger because I was in my early 20s. And one of my friends who was working downstairs, she was fired. She was accused of stealing stuff because she was the same age I was. And then Helene came to me and she goes, you might want to put in your resignation because you're not a good fit here. Oh. It's like, and of course, me being me, I'm not a good fit. Okay, I might as well quit. So I did. But they took me out to lunch and they gave me a really nice party. And even the superintendents were like, where's Eileen? But, you know, so Helene was wrong. I was a pretty good fit, but That's okay, because then I got the best job, or one of the best jobs. I got a job with an adult daycare. I love elderly people. I love people anyway, but. And I was an activities director. And it was awesome. It was in this little church. And I was there. I don't remember how long I was there, but I had gone another roommate, because the other roommates just come and go, right? That's the way it is. But she was actually a daycare person, and she and I became roommates, and eventually the daycare had to close. It lost its funding. But what I did not know is that for a year, the president of the board of the daycare was paying my salary, because she didn't want me to have to go look for another job. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, there's favor there. Mm-hmm. I was not walking with the Lord at that time, and he still favored me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how or why he would do that, because I turned my back. I didn't say, God, I don't believe in you. I would never do that, because that's just, I knew that was a big no-no. So went from there, and then my jobs were kind of sporadic. I did go to work for this gentleman and his wife, and I'm probably skipping over my stuff, but he had three businesses. He owned a gym, he owned a real estate office, and a hair salon. And it was like on one strip, so I was in each one. I was the receptionist for all of them, and in the gym I got to train people. Go figure, right? So it was a fun job. I got to, like I said, I loved all my jobs because each thing gave me something new. And there again, and the apartment that I owned, that I was renting, they had, which was right upstairs. So I had no gas that I had to spend for my car. I mean, it was still expensive because you had to pay for your rent, you had to pay for your insurance and all the other stuff. So I had pretty much enough money for peanut butter and coffee. Life's good. When you're young, it don't matter. You got your coffee, you're great. Until you're not. I ran into a friend of mine, and she lived right up the road, and her and her boyfriend had split up, and she had a house that she was renting. So we became roommates. And we did a lot of not so good things being roommates, because, you know, we had fun. We'd go find our dates and whatnot. But then in October of 1990, he told me that he was going bankrupt and that he couldn't afford to keep me on. So he let me go. My job is done. That whole summer was a downhill spiral. Oh, that's one thing I didn't say. I really got to backtrack. In May of that year, I was in the salon, and this gentleman came in with this gorgeous gentleman came in with a little tow-headed young boy and a girl. And the night before, I had been at a benefit dance, and then I had gone to a bar with one of my friends. And so he came in, and he said, "You look familiar. Have you ever been to Rachel's?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I was there last night, and I definitely wasn't impressed." He's like, "Oh." He says, "Do you know any good places to go?" And I'm like, "Well, Champions in Waterville, more upper class." He says, "Oh, we should go sometime." I'm like, "Yeah, you should." Because here's a guy with a girl and a child. End of story, right? So that whole summer was a crapshoot for a summer. Not good. So in October, I ugly cried in my living room. I was like, "I'm done, God. I am so sorry. I probably just like slobbered all over everywhere." And then Monday, that's when I found out I was being let go. So, all right, my world's just crashing big time. So Tuesday, I went into the unemployment office, And I was like, oh, who's in there? But this gorgeous guy that I met in May. And I'm like, I'm sitting beside him. I come in and I sit down beside him. And he said hi, and I said hi. And he's like, so, no, I asked him, I said, so did you take the little lady to Champions? He goes, oh, I'm not married. And I'm like, oh, well, that changes things, you know? Because I'm not going to go after a married man. That wasn't going to happen. So I went in and I did my business on unemployment, found out that the employer never paid anything in. So I was done for. I was like, I'm walking out, and I'm like, I don't know what to do, God. I walk out to my car, and who is standing by his car? My stalker, as Ariel would call him, Robert. My knight in shining armor. So this is where I'm going to skip a bunch of pages because I've already done that. This is where my mother-in-law comes into place. She, many, many years, she would pray for her kids. And she went through a lot praying for these kids because they probably put a ton of gray hair in her head. But she would go into his house and pray the demons out. And she went in the day before, the night before, she went in and she was praying while he was not there. The next day he met me. So apparently God said, all right, enough is enough. But what we did not know is when he had taken me out, how much we had in common. For instance, the place where I grew up was on this little parcel of lot, and right on the other side of it was a trailer. The person in that trailer was my husband's aunt, my mother-in-law's sister-in-law. And I guess they used to go there quite frequently. But my mother, being as, you know, as she was, I wasn't allowed to go play with other kids. I could only play with my niece and nephew. So I never really knew them. And if I probably wouldn't have recognized him anyway. And then we talked a little bit about church over a couple rum and cokes. So we were just chatting about the life that we had. Talked about this church where that pastor was. And apparently they had been going to that church. He'd even driven the Ohio van, the youth to the Ohio, from that church, I believe. And then, to make things even more strange, he graduated a year before me in my high school. Our paths never crossed. It was just like, how do you do that? Our school was not that big. Gardner and West Gardner was definitely not that big, but we never saw each other. So we just had a chuckle about that. And where he had taken me to eat was a Chinese restaurant that was our favorite for many years. And he actually proposed to me in that same restaurant. So I don't know if we'll go there this year because it really has kind of gone downhill. So then I'm trying to think. We settled down. We decided that, you know, enough is enough. God, he put us together so now we can come together, and we dated for 3 days. I moved in with him and haven't moved out since.
Wow.
Don't recommend that for anybody either, but I guess if you're going to do it, God knew. He knew what I was going to do. So we got married in 1991. My sister had taken care of my mom. In the late 80s, my mother had gotten sick. She was on dialysis 3 times a week, 3 hours, 4 hours a day, because of her diabetes and kidney failure. So when my sister got the go-ahead that we went and got married, we were going to go and live with my mom so we could take care of her for her final days. We were, all of us, Robert and I and Chris and Mom were all in a three-bedroom trailer, one bathroom. It was doable. We did it. We worked it. Because Ariel and... My mom loved Ariel. It was her favorite thing to get her little cup of coffee, and she'd have those wooden handles on the chairs. She would let her coffee sit there and get cold so Ariel could go drink it. And I'd say, Mom, she's not going to get taller if you do that. Oh, stop it. It's not going to hurt her. So, all right, fine. Just do what you got to do. So, my mother was 71 years old when she passed away. Robert was working in Vermont. He was working for the union, and after Mom had passed, and that was five hours away from where we were, where we lived, he's like, I'm done. So he got out of the union for several years because he didn't want me alone like that. It just bothered him that he couldn't be there when my mom died. So he was an independent contractor. He could do just about anything. Build houses, build dumpsters, you name it, he could do it. And he did do it. He always took care of his family. And up until Tyler was born, I worked in a developmentally disabled home. I was the case manager, and I worked with a nonverbal lady who for 10 hours, and she was MRMI. That was not my funnest job. Not at all. And, developmentally disabled. Mentally retarded. Okay. I don't know how else to put it. And that's how I knew I was pregnant, because one day I walked into the building and I was getting sick, and I'm like, oh my. So I went and I got a test, and yep, I was pregnant. Because those kind of smells never bothered me. And then it did. So after Tyler was born, I was a stay-at-home mom. I did some volunteer work at a Christian school until the kids got older. Chris, he wanted to go into high school, so he did. The kids got homeschooled. Ariel and Tyler was homeschooled for quite a bit, and then Tyler went to a Christian school. Ariel had tried high school, but it just wasn't the greatest fit because, you know, she'd already been homeschooled most of her life, so it was kind of silly to try to use your last 2 years and go to a regular public school. So she didn't, and so we stayed doing our homeschooling, and at that point I went to work for Maine General at the Alzheimer Care Center. Favorite job in the world. Loved it, loved it, loved it. My elderly people, who you could make a mistake and they'd still love you because they'd forget about it. And boy, I made a few of them. There were times, though, it wasn't so fun because you would go in for your daily beating, you know, but then there were other times where it's just amazing. You just so much love, you know. And I'm really thankful that God has given me all these abilities to work with all these different people. But I've always had insecurities, always. It didn't matter. It was, insecurities at home, insecurities at church. In 1994, Robert had, when he had finally stopped working at the union, he decided he'd go into the ministry full time, working as the music minister. And yes, I was right beside him. I will support you. Whatever God tells you to do, I will do that. But it took its toll on the family. Really took its toll on the family. He was that, but I ended up wearing many, many hats because it was a very small church. So I got to be the women's ministry, nursery lady, toilet bowl cleaner, you name it, I was it. And then my friend and her husband, my best friend Jan, her husband came to church, and so we got to do some fun stuff like puppets and VBS, and that's where our friendship really bloomed. because we did a lot of fun stuff until we couldn't. You know, I'd been best friends with her for, I can't even, probably 20 years. And last October, she had lost her battle with cancer. But gosh, she won her graduation diploma. It's like, thank you, Jesus, that you know, thank you that she's with you. But, you know, I miss her.
Yeah.
We'll miss her. But we'll see her again. We'll see her. When I sent it to the church, there was a few tribulations going there. I struggled with not ever feeling good enough. It wasn't just in church. It was family, church. I just couldn't be good enough. I couldn't be the perfect person. I couldn't be the perfect mother. I couldn't be the perfect Christian. I couldn't be the perfect worker. I didn't know who I was. I had no identity other than non-perfection. And so I'd keep doing things. I would do and do and do. And when it was a position was open, nobody would take it. So who took it? It needed to be done. If you're not going to clean the toilet, somebody's going to do it. If you're not going to work in the nursery, somebody's got to do it. It might as well be me. You know, it's like a little martyr syndrome, I guess. I don't know. Because probably somebody would have done it had I not. But my kids were there. They needed to be taken care of, too. No one ever really told me I wasn't good enough. Nobody ever said anything, but rumors got around. You know, people say stuff. You know, when you're in a small place, you hear things. You know, I do have pretty good hearing. but that's all right, because everybody has their stuff. And my pastor, he loved us. Both of them, the pastor and pastor's wife, did love us. But she would get a little bit upset with me because I wouldn't go to her with my problems. And I told her right up front, I don't go to pastor's wives with my problems. And it's not because I don't trust them. It's because they've got so much on their plates. You know, I've kind of since gone away from that a little bit. But I'm still very careful who I talk to. You know, we have to be, you know. But eventually, after 20 years of being in that church, the pastor passed away. He lost his struggle with small cell cancer. So the church had dwindled right down to probably 10 people, and that's including our family. So there wasn't a whole lot of people left there. And Robert knew that it was time to go. I had been feeling for a few years that we needed to be out of there because it was more damaging to us. But he kept saying, I am not released to go. I am not released to go. And I'm like, but I am. Anyway, we didn't go. We stayed, and it caused quite a bit of damage in the family. I think probably some things were done that didn't need to be done. But that's all right. You know, God still knows he's on the throne, and he's going to take care of everybody, including our children. So once Pastor Labonte died, Robert had the release. Because God told him, when he stays, you stay. When he's not there, you can leave. I don't know if that was Robert just feeling that way, because I didn't feel that way. But like I said, I'm going to follow him because he's the head of the house. And so we did. So after that, he decided to go back to the union, pick it back up so he could get all of his retirement bennies and all that. And that's when we made the decision to move down here.
Hey.
My mother-in-law, God love her, she's always looking for a place for us down here. Because she thought we knew we wanted to have a place down here, but it was just going to be a snowbirding thing or a vacation thing. Well, it ended up being we loved it. So down we are. We're down here. And God love her. She's a trooper. She does everything. She's so cool. Got the house ready for us, you know, made sure we had some dishes, and she was quite the blessing. Well, she still is. I'm not using you in past tense, but when we get down here, I'm going to be honest. At this point, it did take me a little bit of time to feel some connection in here. Because I am so inside myself, I did not feel comfortable around people. And there were two ladies in particular that went out of their way. They were like so pivotal to me feeling like I actually belong here. Anna and Lori, you guys loved on me when I didn't feel love. I mean, and the thing is I know that people would love me, but I couldn't let people love me because I didn't know how. And so for you guys, blessings, and you guys got too many crowns going already. But now I know that I am loved, and it's not just because you guys showed me love, but just showed me the Father's love.
Yeah.
Because that was the most important thing. And I'm just about done. I still want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. Hopefully not oversharing a little bit of piece of my world. And now I have one last thing that I want to do. As Ariel's going to play this song, can I shut this off? Or do you want the song on it?
You can put the song on.
All right. So when Ariel plays the song, I want you to look at it. I'm going to pass out a couple things. Some bookmarks, because it all goes along with this song. God really touched me with this song, and I struggled because I wanted to do something because I love to do stuff. And so as Ariel's putting that song on, these little bookmarks, they actually fit in a book because Ariel tested it. You can if you want to put magnets on it if you want to, or you could, I don't know, use it anywhere you want. Do you want to help me pass other stuff out, or do you want to wait? Okay. Sorry. One last thing. I know Anna wanted me to pray over everybody, so this is my prayer for you guys. You want to pass this out?
Yeah.
All right.
Pass just one out.
Yeah, well, why don't you come behind me?
Okay.
Oh, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are
you?
So, yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
not worthless, you're precious. You're not left out, you're wanted. You're irreplaceable with your shining soul. Love has spoken, you are chosen.
Amen.
Amen.
Blessings to you all. Never forget how chosen you are.
So, okay.